And we are now joined by the Northfield Area Fire and Rescue Service Chief, the man himself, Mr. Tom Nelson. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning. Is my mic even on?
See, I'm looking over.
Yeah, see, and I knew he was, like, while I'm introducing me, he's giving me the look. It's the radio engineer look.
No, I'm looking at and saying, my mic isn't on.
Right, I'm not gonna speak until you turn my mic on.
Yeah, but good morning, Rich and Ryan.
How are you today?
Doing well.
Always good to see you, Tom.
So we're trying to dredge up a little bit of stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have a joint powers meeting
right.
of the Northfield Area
What happened there? You guys just decided to take the month off?
No, well, we've... Larry Aldarks, our chair, and I have been talking about, I said, it would be really nice to not meet if we don't need to meet, whether it's board meetings or personnel committee or finance committee. And so we're trying to do, you know, staff does a lot of those things. And if it's just a report, that can be an email and try to say, let's pack some action items together. And so we didn't have personnel committee or finance committee this month and said, well, let's just not have the joint powers meeting. There was not a big cry of, oh no.
You bring up a very good point. How many meetings have you ever walked out of that said that could have been an email?
When I get those emails come through where they're like, meeting canceled. Oh.
Yeah, that's a good feeling.
It's like the best feeling.
Time. Yes. Oh, I'm so it's like a snow day.
Yes.
It is.
It is the grown person snow day.
It
there
is.
You go.
It is.
Working person snow day.
Bummer, my meeting was canceled. Yeah. Said no one ever.
Yeah.
Exactly. But that doesn't mean you guys haven't been busy.
We have.
And you want to talk about this house fire that was on Juniper Avenue, but first, can I ask you, what happened in the parking lot the other day?
Yeah, that was a car off to the side in the parking lot, and I was sitting in my office and it came in as a car fire. And a lot of times we call it the do-gooder with the cell phone is somebody calls in because, especially out on the interstate, there's someone that's pulled over to the side of the road and there's white smoke coming under the hood. It's like that steam, it overheated. So then I shoot over there, you know, the half a block it is, and Thad Monroe and others are busily trying to use fire extinguishers. And it's just some mechanical problem with the car. But even if the trucks are half a block away, they go fast. It was good. We were able to block the road off and just attack it from Highway 3 and put it to bed.
Our car, you know, I of course just go to the, think about the exploding gas tank, right? Are car fires scarier for you guys than something else? Like, or is there more urgency with a car fire than, there's urgency with every car.
Right. The thing is so much, it's identical to the thing of like when you see a fire sprinkler go off on TV, it's like a shower, right? It's clean, wet water. Yeah. When a sprinkler goes off for real, it's all the rust in those pipes in the past 20 years that come out all over the floor. With car fires, they don't explode.
Okay.
There are some things that can that make you, you know, take a step back and maybe want to go home after the call and change some of your clothes. You know, we'll have tires that'll blow, and sometimes the gas struts will pop. Oh. What usually happens now? Most fuel tanks are plastic, and what will happen is when they melt, they will dump the fuel. So it's like, oh crap, back up. And then the other thing that's sort of kind of cool is transmissions are usually made of magnesium. And so once those get going, and then if anyone had science back when we actually used flame, that was allowed. Magnesium, I can't remember the word, chemists, but if you put water on it, it just makes it worse. So it's always interesting to see, you know, the transmission's going and we tell one of the new people, okay, put it out. So for the most part, you know, you've got it's a lot of it now. Back in the day, it was you weren't even wearing air packs. You just go up and you put it out and you pry the hood.
Right.
It's the same stuff in a car that there are in homes now. It's all plastic and everything. So
all the fumes and all that crap.
Yeah, so you got to have all your PPE, personal protective equipment on.
There's a relic from the COVID days. Thanks for reminding me of that one. You guys live with
that
every day.
PPE long before. So, yeah, and we've had our share of grass fires already. Our first grass fire was in February.
That's, well, yeah, pretty dry winter. Yep. All right. But there was this house fire on Juniper Avenue. You guys got there early on. When a call like that comes in, like, what's the process?
Yeah, well, you know, you're gauging it. We get call notes, the pager, they put out what they're hearing. And when we hear a call, like, there's a garage on fire, mm-hmm. and flames are this and this, it's like, okay, that's a working fire.
Yeah.
And so we immediately, you know, get up there, and law enforcement is getting there. And my job, or the other assistant chief's job, is to give a size up.
Okay.
And first thing we do is go, and at this case, we got, and the fire was rolling out of the front of the garage.
Oh. Was it an attached garage?
Yes.
Oh, God.
Yes. Okay. It was attached. And that's all. That's a question that dispatch almost always asks, because it makes a big difference.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, a huge difference, I would think. So did it spread then to the rest of the house?
Yeah, it did. And what's, you know, there's firewalls in the garages to protect the garage from mm-hmm. the house. Mm-hmm. In this case, the biggest issue was the man door that goes, you know, think of the garage on the front, and then there's a door that goes out to the backyard.
Yeah.
That door was open, because I think that's how the dog gets hooked on and then runs out to the backyard.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm. The neighbor next door had Ring cameras, or whatever brand, mm-hmm. all the way around the house. And afterwards he said, I've got this all on video.
Oh, wow.
So we could see the fire go from the garage, build in the garage, and then there was enough of a wind that it kind of worked its way out the side of the house, got into the siding, got in, and got up into the attic.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God. So was anyone home? I mean, there's a fire not too far from my house, as you and I have discussed, and that was discovered. No one was living in the place, and that was discovered by someone just walking their dog and saw flames. How often is it someone calls and says, my house is on fire, versus, hey, there's a house on fire?
Right. And this, you know, timing wise, and that was a little scary on our responses, it was right when Greenvale Park let out.
Oh.
It was like 3:20 in the afternoon. And so then it's like, oh my gosh, we got kids. We got to be really careful. So the mom and the son were home. He was, you know, home very recently. And the dog apparently started barking at the door between the house and the garage, just going crazy. And so the son opened the door like, what's going on?
Oh. It's
like, the garage is on fire. So the dog, I talked to, you know, the homeowner, and he's like, yeah, our dog's getting a cape now.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And then, but you know, you think about that and say, okay, luckily it was at 3:30 in the afternoon and not 3:30 in the morning.
Right.
And everyone got out fine, which is always the most important thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Were any how about the firefighters? Anyone hurt? Anyone?
No. It was really a good hit, and we had a good turnout, and we were able to make an attack. But yeah, there's significant damage in the house.
Okay. That was my next question. When we talk about significant damage, is it that, like, you just lost everything? Or
yeah, and it's, you know, there's sometimes, and we've had it happen in town, where it's like, oh yeah, no, we got it out, and then, you know, like 2 weeks later they're tearing the house down, right? Yeah, and building it up.
Yeah.
This, in my opinion, is not a teardown. This is
that's good.
A rebuild.
All right. Okay. Well, that's good. But man, I've heard you talk about when a fire gets into an attic, you've got real problems at that point.
Yeah. I mean, basically on half of the house, all the sheetrock upstairs is pulled down to get at the attic.
Yeah.
So you can imagine how that looks doing the walkthrough with the homeowner after that, with the fire investigator. Mm-hmm. So.
After the fact, were there anything you can discuss, any findings about what caused the fire to begin with?
Yeah, so in cases like this, and, you know, this is a major loss, a couple of things happen. One is we bring in the state fire marshal, has an investigator that, you know, by region. So I asked Levi to come up. They were all in training up in Grand Rapids, so it took a couple days, so the house got all boarded up, and then we went through. And there was no, pardon the pun, smoking gun.
Yeah.
And then when there's significant damage, it's really hard to say, oh, it was that thing right there. But part of the investigation is interviewing, you know, the mom, the son. And what was interesting, too, is the homeowner had, Levi said, do you have any pictures of the garage? He goes, oh, yeah, I do. And he showed us a picture so we could see on the wall where the fire originated, there's like a fridge. There weren't, you know, DeWalt drills or, you know, chargers plugged in or, you know, kids messing around or anything. I mean, we were all kids. That's the first thing I kind of think about is, what did I do back in that day?
Right.
No. And so Levi's job is to make sure there's nothing suspicious. And then what happens typically, and I've gotten reached out by this person, is the insurance company assigns an adjuster and or investigator to come in. And, of course, they are looking just like they did with the building next door, is was there some system or thing that we, if we pay the claim, that we can go to another insurance company to get our money back, subrogation. So in this case, there was nothing suspicious. The only thing it makes you think it's probably the refrigerator because the only thing that had power.
Okay.
But really, there's no. It's considered undetermined.
All right. So you said that you had some good turnout. Did you have enough just Northfield firefighters to do this?
Yeah. One of the things that we are all taught is mutual aid is a tool that's best tapped early. And so what mutual aid is, if Faribault has a big fire or Lonsdale or Randolph has a big fire, they call mutual aid from their mutual aid partners. I knew that this was a daytime call and that our numbers are less than evening calls because there are people that work out of town. Mm-hmm. So when I got there and did the size up, I basically immediately said to dispatch to get me an engine from Faribault. Some of the things we have right now, too, is, you know, we've talked at length about the new probationary firefighters that we've hired. They are great, and they can do a lot of things, but they're not trained to go inside with air packs. Mm. So that limits our number of interior firefighters. And the big thing is, you know, you think about the big cities, is they just throw bodies at it, right? It's like, give me another engine company. You know, they keep pushing the button where you can just pound your crews.
Yeah.
The crews that went in initially into the house after knocking the garage down said that upstairs flashed over on them. And so...
What does that mean,
flashed over? That just means everything gets so hot that it just ignites.
Okay.
And that's all contents and everything. So, and that just, you know, it's like very aerobic and you're hot. And so you come out and you just need to rehab for a little while.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So having Faribault come up, they were able to come up and most of the fire was knocked down at that point. But then you got to start pulling ceilings and having help from them was great. And that's, you know, we can all count on each other for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, that worked out well. And as far as the turnout, we really did have a great turnout for a day call.
That's great.
Okay.
I assume there's a lot of reciprocity there, too. Like, you guys are heading down to Faribault on a pretty regular basis.
Yeah, and, you know, that's everything. Think about all the stuff in the townships between these cities.
Yeah.
Is that if we're headed towards something down by the landfill, we'll have Faribault start heading that way.
Right.
You can always turn them around. But it's one of those things John Mahajic used to always say, or always said, what you do in the first 5 minutes is going to dictate what you're going to do for the next 5 hours.
Well, and speaking of which, because with larger structural fires like this, do you, and especially having probationary firefighters involved, do you do kind of a follow-up afterwards just to say, hey, this is what worked well, this is what didn't?
Yeah, and that's really important is to do, you know, whether you call it a post-mortem or an after-action debrief is, we'll take probably next Monday at our meeting and we'll walk through and it's great. What we'll typically do is we'll have somebody lead it who wasn't there. So they're not biased. And then kind of go down the timeline. And then, you know, as we're going, say what worked, how was truck placement? Did you have good water supply? What would everyone do differently? What did we learn? And it also brings, you know, in something like this, we had firefighters that showed up right away, and then others, when they saw that it was a working structure fire, and they may be working in Webster or something, putting in an air conditioner, They come back, so that gives us crew relief, but they're not seeing what happened beforehand. Mm. So it lets everyone know kind of the big picture and draw it up. So then that, what did you do well? What did you should you have done differently? Mm-hmm. Everyone gets that expertise. We've also had it happen where we've had external people come in, you know, external people from our training company that, mm-hmm. that comes in, and they basically run us through that. Again, then they can critique along the way, and they know what questions to ask. Did you think about this, this, and this? Oh, no, we didn't. Yeah. So that's the stuff that whether you're probationary or whether you have been on only a couple of years, we don't have that many structure fires. So that's why we do as many training burns as we do and then talk them through so that you can gain that experience.
This is making me think, actually, there have been two fires in my neighborhood. A few years ago, there was a house fire on Ford Street, and I had just gotten the news director job, and I'm literally sitting at my dining room table. I look out the window, and there's smoke sort of floating up the street. Like, what's going on there? Sure enough, down the block, there was a house fire in Ford Street, and I ran over, and I took some pictures, and the guy I was standing next to, turns out, was the homeowner, and he was on the phone with his wife in complete shock, and he just said... He's just saying over and over again, our house is on fire. Our house is burning to the ground. What do you say to these poor people? And like, what kind of training do you guys have to deal with that?
And that's a really big thing. One of the things that John Mahacek, again, going back decades, said, we were at a call, and I said, it was a crash. And I said, John, you know, there was enough people doing, you know, attending to the thing. I just went over and talked to the family.
Yeah.
And he said, that is the second most important thing. And for me, and especially in my role, is once the scene is going, I'm incident commander. Once we get kind of everything dialed up and we're doing the job, typically I hand command over to one of the assistant chiefs or captains, because that's what builds this, right? Mm-hmm. The leadership. If I run every call and then I retire, right? Yeah. So that gives me the opportunity to be more of a troubleshooter and like, hey, folks, this is a trick we can use so we can open up Lincoln Parkway and be able to have traffic. Let's let this truck be fed this way. Yeah. But another thing is to go walk up and talk to the family. A, you get that initial, like, what did you see? What did you find? What was going on? Is there anything in the garage I need to worry about? Is there anything in the house? Any animals? But then what I say, and I say it just like this, this is really easy for me to say, but it's just stuff.
Right.
And I say, I know there's a but at the end of that, but first stop and think how different this would be. Same thing with a crash. How different this would be if we were, someone was in the house.
Right.
I was just going to say, is that kind of the big takeaway for anybody who is out there listening to this whole experience right now, is it's just stuff?
It is, but then the but, and what was interesting is, remember, school was out at this point, and so there were neighbor kids on the sidewalk crying. Mm. I thought it was the family.
Mm. Yeah.
So I went up and I said, what's going on? And they're like, are they going to have to move away? So what it took for me was, and you guys can think about the building that was next door, is that devastation impacts the community.
It absolutely does. Yeah.
Whether it's I worked there or, you know, any of these things, the Red Cross was called on this case. And so the homeowners are, I think, still in a hotel in town.
Okay.
And I said, they said, well, we could go stay at, you know, my brother's up in whatever. I said, but the kids need to go to school. And they're like, oh, gosh, you're right. This is a long process to rebuild this. I mean, if you drive by Bridgewater Heights?
Yep.
That townhome is all still boarded up.
Yep,
there's
it is.
Nothing that started. So those people are out of that house for that long.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Last that's year, been, year and a half. Year,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And a year and a half ago, there was a townhome up in Jonathan Hill on Woodley Street. One of the units burned. There were two other units that were damaged that those people were displaced. So where I bring that around is prevention. Right. Is that, yes, it's just stuff, but that's important stuff, and they don't have a place to live. Yeah. So yeah, that just brought me to the whole thing about, I wrote it down as the tentacles of the tragedy.
Yeah,
is that no one was hurt. Yes, but the neighbor, their house, the siding got completely melted off. Did it start on fire? No. Good. We took care of that. But some of the things, and again, I'm talking in general now, I'm not talking about the call up on Juniper, is that things that I want people to think about is, and I've seen, and because all of these things I've seen that are fire causes or make it spread worse, the spread is worse. Smoking. Where do you smoke? Where do you put them? Where do you dispose of them? I have on my hand, I can think of 3 or 4 fires that were caused because of smoking, usually outside because people don't smoke in the house very much anymore, but they put the butt or they flick the butt or whatever. We had a fire at the Cub, at Cub Foods outside where smokers, you know, didn't properly dispose of a cigarette, and it started the like Arbivita plant on fire in the parking lot and burnt the fences. And what was right next to them? The propane tanks. So, again, where are you smoking? Where are you putting them out? Are they far enough away? Don't have it right by the house. Don't flick them off the deck. Open flames in general. My kids, no, we can't have candles. Why? Because my dad said we can't have candles. And we had candles in our house when we were first married, but I also know of plenty of fires that are caused by open flames. Yep. Candles are nice, yeah. We've had curtains catch on fire. We had a fire up on the east side this year, room and contents, because the candle, you know, the drape blew over. Think before you use candles. The other big one is alcohol and anything. And I've never told the story, and Marilyn's going to say, you did what? I quit drinking in 2009, and maybe this is one of the reasons. But I remember, I'm a charcoal guy. I'm not a propane guy. Yeah. So built a fire in a little chimney, whatever, and then waited too long, and it had gone down, right? Yep. So it was ready to dump the coals, making steak. So I took the charcoal bag, and I dumped some more in. And then I took the bag, and I put it over in the wood chips. Our porch is about 3 feet off, screened-in porch. Normally, we throw the charcoal under the porch. This one, I thought, oh, I'm just going to kind of leave it here. I'd been drinking. The next morning, I came out, and the bag of charcoal was gone. Some embers had gone up into the paper.
Oh, man.
And in the pile, away enough. But if I would have put that back under the porch. So my point is,
you'd had a couple.
Well, yeah. And it's like most bad decisions that one makes can be even badder by alcohol.
Yeah.
And so, again, think about, and this is even separate from the whole thing about, hold my beer at the campfire and then end up in the region's burn unit.
Right.
But just that. And the other thing that's key, I think, is I've talked about compartmentalization, keeping the fire contained. Think about when you go out in your garage, look at, is the firewall, but there should be a firewall, sheetrock, between your garage attached and your house. Have you put in one of those pull-down ladders from Menards so that you can store stuff up in, you know, the foldy things? Typically, those aren't fire-rated. So you have now breached your compartment firewall, and then the fire can go up. Have you knocked a hole through the firewall to get into the attic to run a wire? All those things think about. And the other thing is just look around the house and say, do we need this stuff? Do we need this box of stuff? That is all fire load. So declutter. It's the perfect time of year. I saw Dundas is having it. Northfield will be having their cleanup days. Declutter your garage, your house, around the house. Make sure that the plants aren't those kind that are those oily evergreens that if they catch on fire, they're going to climb up the side of the house. So prevention. Because it's not just about lives. It's about what's it going to take to get us back on our feet after we have a tragedy.
Wow. Okay.
How do we do? Poor Tim.
Tim McNiff is sitting going, what's going on? Are we doing this today?
It must be a technical difficulty. So, yeah, that's today's message.
Message.
It's a very good message. Thank you for being here,
It's always good to see you, but that was especially good. Well, so thanks.
Good.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.